The next step for many federal agencies moving to the cloud is a brokerage model. Some agencies are trying it out. Some agencies already seeing results and savings. Anil Carmel set up a cloud brokerage model when he was Deputy Chief Technology Officer at the National Nuclear Security Administration. He's now founder and CEO of C2 Labs Incorporated and my guest on Industry Chatter today. And Anil, it's great to see you. We've been trying for a long time to get you in here when you were at NNSA. And now with your company, it's wonderful to have you in here. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you very much for having me here.
So we start with the cloud brokerage model, and I think I hear as many questions about that concept as I did about cloud 3-5 years ago when people were still really feeling the concept out and seeing what it looked like in a public sector model. What is your sense, based on what you did at NNSA, at where it applies in government, where it works well, and what the benefits really are?
Yeah, definitely. So when we talk about cloud brokers, you know, it's really around three specific areas that organizations are looking to transform. Agility, being able to quickly deliver services to their constituents, given the whole mantra of more with less.
Mm-hmm.
Flexibility, being able to consume new resources quickly and efficiently, whether on-premise or off-premise. And then transparency, wherein you have the ability to quantify the cost of IT service delivery across your portfolio of investments. So when you look at it through those three specific areas, cloud brokerage really enables you to satisfy those requirements, understand the portfolio of investments that you have on premise today, take better advantage of those investments, and then also add to that the myriad of different cloud computing options that are available publicly, whether infrastructure as a service, platform as a service, software as a service, and have a single control plane to unify the consumption and delivery of IT services through that cloud service broker. It's a model that a lot of both federated and centralized agencies can leverage to optimize their service offerings and provide additional value to the people that they serve.
Take me back to the beginning of this process at Los Alamos when you were originally going through this. What were the apprehensions that you had to overcome as the decision maker, as the deputy CTO, and what were the things that you learned as you went through that process that made you comfortable with the idea that this was going to work for you?
Yeah, definitely. So, you know, within a research organization, as a service organization to a research organization, it's understanding the needs of your constituents, right? Really getting face-to-face with your stakeholders and understanding what are your day-to-day operational challenges? Why do you have a desktop under your desk serving as a server or a closet acting as a server room? Why did you make that decision? What is it that IT did not deliver to you that encouraged you to go make a decision on your own? When you think about the way that we consume IT services today personally, we don't go ask what we want to buy. We make decisions around what type of tablet or phone or application to install on our devices without consulting somebody. So now that that culture has really invoked itself in our personal lives, you're seeing that pervade itself into our professional lives. So having IT change the way it delivers services from being a sole service provider to being a broker advisor really helped start that process at the national lab of building a private cloud. So instead of those users having to come to IT and say, I want a server that's this sized for this mission, and then waiting for IT to deliver that server, users now had the ability to go to a cloud portal,
mm-hmm.
vis-a-vis broker, to automatically request and provision those servers without having to call somebody.
Mm-hmm.
Simple, effective, and easy to use.
When you started that process and of talking to the end users and finding out what their needs really were, I see the potential for two different responses. One response is, hey, this sounds like an opportunity for me to explain what I really need. That's a positive response. The potential negative response was, what's this guy doing here? He wants to come and move my cheese and rearrange what I'm doing, and I'm not sure I'm real crazy about that. How did you get around that kind of cultural or worldview resistance that didn't have anything to do with the technology?
Definitely. And that's probably the biggest issue is that organizational challenge, right? You have to respect the culture of your home organization, wherever you might be. Knowing that those people made a choice and a decision around what IT investments that they've made, no one is going to say, I'm central IT, I'm going to take that IT asset and you're going to be happy. Mm-hmm. No one's going to buy that. Right. It's just not going to work, right? You have to respect the culture and say, look, you own that asset, you manage that asset, we are not going to take that asset from you. We're going to allow you to provision that asset into a virtual server farm that you can still own and manage. Right. So mm-hmm. from that perspective, the user maintains their autonomy, right? IT is not saying you're going to do this. They're simply providing a platform for that person to make a decision, a cost and security-based decision around how to operate that system more efficiently and effectively. So from the who moved their cheese, you're not actually moving the cheese. You're providing better cheese to choose from.
And a different opportunity to do the same thing that they're doing now, I guess, is a way of maybe explaining it that somebody can buy into fairly easily.
Yeah, absolutely. You have to clearly articulate the value proposition, not simply through a one-to-one conversation, because that isn't scalable, but through a one-to-many conversation. And that's what Cloud Brokerage allows you to do, is it allows you to have that one-to-many conversation because it's simple and easy to use. You go to a cloud broker, and that's the design principle and constraint that you should have, is it needs to be simple, elegant, easy to use so that a fifth grader could do it,
mm-hmm.
right? You know, wherein, you know, you make a decision as to what size of cheese, you know, what type of cheese you want, where do you want the cheese to live, based on a variety of factors, cost, security, who has access to that information. But all those decisions are yours.
Now, when we think about the consolidation of the CIO, at least the leadership in agencies across government, the concept that you're describing there, at least initially, seems to be kind of contrary to that, where people have the opportunity to go, not necessarily, let's say you have the agency level CIO here, and you have bureau level people below him or her, and then people further down the chain. If you have a model where somebody further down the chain can go and procure this stuff pretty directly, it seems it has the potential, at least, to go contrary to that idea of having somebody at the very top of the organization planning long-term vision and strategy for an organization. Am I missing something in the connection there?
Well, I think you need to have a tops-down, bottoms-up approach, wherein, you know, there needs to be that overall planning and strategy at the CIO level. Right. That enables that purchasing decision that's made at the endpoint through a vehicle that allows you to affect that planning and strategy and provide the guardrails and the guide rails for that component to make decisions that make sense for them. Because overarching CIO planning and strategy needs to be refined and honed at the component level based on their organizational needs and their particular mission and the needs of their constituents. Having a vehicle and a model to allow that overall planning and strategy to flow down to those endpoints, to those bureau component CIOs, and then to the actual end users and customers within government agencies to make decisions that allow them, again, through those guide rails, to own and manage those resources, but do so through a platform.
Mm-hmm.
That's that top-down, bottom-up approach.
Okay, so tell me if I've got this right then. The control that I have as the agency-level leader is that I know that although the people below me, whether it's one level or several levels down, have some autonomy and self-determination, I know that they have that autonomy and self-determination within that platform that I've established for the entire agency and through the deal that I have with the broker that I've selected as the one that's right for my agency. Am I on track there?
Yeah, fundamentally accurate.
Okay. Yep. Anil Carmel is my guest. He's founder and CEO of C2 Labs. When I think of a brokerage model, I think of myself, the person using that brokerage service, as the person who pays for it. When I use a stockbroker, I pay that guy a commission to manage my investments, or a real estate agent sells my house. A part of the commission, that person's commission, comes out of the proceeds of the sale of the house. How does that transaction work on the brokerage end? And what do I get in exchange for just going out and buying my cloud all from one vendor in a transaction through a cloud broker.
Yeah, definitely. So, you know, there's two different models. There's the full chargeback model, wherein you go to the broker and you make a decision, cost, security, type of data, who's going to access it, and you purchase that through the broker. And you're charged back to your individual program for the resources that you consume. There's the showback model, wherein you go and do the same thing, but you're just shown back what those costs are. And whomever manages that service for you pays for that as a whole. So based on the needs and the way that your organization is structured, whether centralized or decentralized, you can provide, again, those guide rails for how you make those decisions, right? Now, there's technical brokerage, which is that technical vehicle and that platform to do technical brokerage and manage that plane between the consumer and the provider of services, whether on-premise or off-premise. And then there's business brokerage, which manages the business relationship between the consumer and the provider. And that's where the chargeback and showback models fall into play. And you need to have a clear delineation between those two models, and then understand how you are going to manage the contracts, the legal aspects of that within the business relationships, so that you know what those portfolio investments are.
Mm-hmm. Is there one format or the other that has proven or is proving to be more popular with federal agencies, or are we still kind of in the beginning stages of figuring all this out?
Well, I think it's actually a marriage of both. You can't have one without the other.
Okay.
The business brokerage piece and the technical brokerage piece, while fundamentally separate, do need to work together. To enable that simple, easy to use, effective service delivery to customers both inside and outside your organization. But those are two fundamental components that need to be clearly thought through and defined for a particular organization.
One of the things that your colleagues in the CTO and CIO categories who are still in government say to me all the time is, I am so consumed with what is going on short term at my agency, the challenges we're dealing with today, or the things that we have coming in the next budget cycle or whatever, that I don't get the time that I would like to have to think conceptually and think strategically about what my organization's going to look like in 2 years or 5 years or 10 years. You and I have talked a little bit about the opportunity that you've had to do that since you've been out of the government and working at your company. And I wonder what you see as the priorities that you would tell your colleagues who are still in government should be looking at, paying attention to when they are in the process of making those strategic judgments and thinking about the vision that they have for their organizations for the future.
Definitely. No, I can definitely empathize and relate. Having sat as a former CTO and now being on this side for 4 months, you know, I can definitely relate. I can feel that pain. When I started thinking, you know, strategically around, you know, how does a C-level executive, a current CTO or CIO, do that strategic planning when IT is changing so quickly around us, right? How do you really understand what is the next best technology that is going to help my organization save dollars, help me to be more safe, more secure, safeguard my information? And how do I get that into my agency in a way that's quick without ending up spending 2 years to get it here? And then by that time, I've already missed the boat. Right. So what I would proffer is look at your overall IT portfolio and your investments through a different lens around four specific areas. Who's the user? What data are they trying to access? Where's the user and where's the data? And how are they trying to get there? Something that we can think about as context-aware IT, where the level of assurance of the data defines the required level of trust. So then you can then design your IT portfolio of services, whether they're on-premise or off-premise, around those four specific principles. So let's start with user, understanding who the user is. Well, in large federated agencies, you have a myriad of different identity management platforms that are typically not connected. So how do you really understand the identity of your user and what applications they're supposed to access? take a look at federated identity management solutions that allow you to take all of those identity management platforms that you already have existing investments today. Centralizing those is a very costly endeavor and leads to large O&M, especially if you have component organizations that understand their mission and need to have those identity solutions close to their mission. So having a federated identity management platform to deal with that is key. Where's the user? Where's the data? Right? Understanding the location of data and understanding the value of the information of both the data and then the users that are accessing that information and where they're accessing that information is key, right? So, and that's at what data are they trying to access and where's the user, where's the data? And then how are they trying to get there? What delivery vehicles do they have? We're talking about mobile devices. You're changing the way desktops are being delivered and now desktop as a service. You now have the burgeoning Internet of Things where you now have completely new vehicles to present and consume information, right? So given that myriad and that different paradigm, baking in intelligence into your applications and your underlying infrastructure through an overarching platform and an architecture is really a way that I would encourage C-level executives to approach the problem.
How is the explosion in data changing the way that a CTO or CIO approaches his or her job?
Well, that's fundamentally a problem. Wherein there, you know, like I said, the world around us, you know, we have this Internet of Things around us. The world around us is becoming a sensor network. So we've got all of these different sensors around us. We've got sensors in our pockets vis-a-vis a smartphone or tablets in our hands. So given the explosion of data and the sensors that we have around us, how we consume and deliver that information is key. Understanding the risk around if that information is put into the wrong hands is key, right? And you talk about the mosaic effect, where you have two different or three different pieces of information that are brought together that end up generating a result that you don't want an adversary to see, right? Again, understanding the value of your information is important. So a CIO and a C-level organization, like a CIO or a CISO, when you think about the Reiki matrix, responsible, accountable, consulted, and informed, the CIO and the CISO are responsible and accountable, but are they typically consulted and informed at the data element layer, especially with the explosion of data around them? Not necessarily.
The analytics problem seems to me, too, something that's going to get bigger before it gets better. I mean, companies come in all the time and talk about the data analytics tools that they are making available to federal agencies, and they're terrific tools. But I wonder, it seems to me the disconnect right now is understanding that mosaic effect that you talked about a moment ago. And by nature, the people who work for the federal government are good people and they're service-oriented people. They're not bad people who think about the bad things that they can do with information if they collect it and layer it in certain ways. And I wonder if that might impact the way that we are able to think ahead of the bad guys vis-a-vis the mosaic effect that you talked about and understanding the value of the data that we collect and how it might fit together to make that puzzle, to create that picture.
Absolutely. And what this is talking about, like I said, as a former federal servant, you know, really having someone that looks specifically at that problem is important. It's the role of the data architect. It's a new role that, you know, is now understood in industry, but is really starting to be understood on the government side, is you really need a data architect that can design your solutions, design your environment, understanding the value of information, understanding what the mosaic effect can do to those different components as they're brought together, and what analytic platforms add value to your information, right? And what information can I expose via open API to consumers to make new applications that the government couldn't even dream possible? A data architect can indeed take on that responsibility. So what I would proffer to my fellow CTOs and the CIOs of organizations is take a look at that new role. Take a look at what a data architect can do for you, how they can help design your environment and help you be consulted and informed about the risk of your data and the value of your information.
What makes a good data architect? What are the qualifications that that person has that makes you think they're going to be able to handle that role and supply you with the information that you're talking about?
One sentence. They can make big data small. They can make data small. They can make it relevant. They can make it actionable. They can make it useful. And they understand what that, again, that value of that information is, where it's, where it is, you know, not just looking at the three V's of volume and variety and
and the third one.
And the third one. Looking at it from a lens of really taking that data, bringing it down to the very smallest component level, and making it useful and making it relevant and actionable to a consumer.
How do you make a business case for a data architect in an environment, in a budget environment like we're in right now? Is there an ROI for somebody in that role?
I think so. There really is an ROI because, again, it's quantifying the value of your information, that, which then feeds into the portfolio of investments that you're going to make around not just big data, but cloud and mobile. Because once you understand the value of your information and how you're interacting with it, everything else falls into place. So I would say if you're going to make an investment in people, make an investment in a data architect. You're already hearing the words chief data officer being thrown around, right? Well, start in that top-down, bottom-up approach. Have someone at that fundamental level, that data architect, that can design that in environment for you, understand what that data is, so that those C-level execs, the CIO, especially with Vitara moving forward, can now understand the value of information and fully spell out that Reiki matrix.
We're almost out of time, Anil. What was the spark for you as you left government to just for you to decide to start this company rather than to go with somebody that was already established?
Definitely. Well, I will say it was an honor and a privilege to serve the NNSA for the past 10 years. And, you know, really for me, creating new capabilities is something that has always been near and dear to my heart. It was something that I was able to do in the national labs at Los Alamos, be able to lead here and had the opportunity to lead here at headquarters. You know, really taking a look now at what cloud brokerage means through the lens of security and risk in a cloud-connected enterprise. You know, those are things that, you know, as I was looking at the landscape of products and services available today, I found a gap there of, you know, how does a organization effectively manage security and risk inside and outside your organization across cloud service providers? We've got a great way of doing it internally. We need a great way of doing it holistically. So those are some of the things that we are working on through our services arm and our product that we're creating that we think will fundamentally transform that value proposition.